confidence, being patient, following the rules and regulations such as healing and chanting, remembering pastimes of the Supreme Lord, abandoning association of non-devotees or those who are disinterested in hearing and talking and discussing the topics of Krishna, and following in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. These are six principles favorable for the advancement of devotional service. The essay that we are reading from is discussing patience. And I found that this patience, topic of patience, seems to be very relevant to many of those who have either just begun the sadhana bhakti, those who have been engaged in sadhana bhakti for many years, and even those who have been engaged in sadhana bhakti for 30 years or more, that patience, as defined by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is something that each and every one of us needs to know how to apply, but not, sometimes we hear the word patience, it's maybe discouraging, because it may be just used sometimes as a way of sidestepping some of the problems. Be patient, Prabhu, it will come. It may be a common answer sometimes people hear when they have a particular problem, disturbed mind, or discouragement, disappointment. Be patient. Just chant Hare Krishna. And, you know, there are many, many instructions of which define the power of devotional service given by Krishna, given by speakers of Bhagavatam and our previous acharyas, which emphasize the positive activities of Krishna consciousness, which are hearing about Krishna, chanting about Krishna, controlling the tongue. Usually we generally hear, well, just speak only about Krishna and honor only Krishna prasadam, and the tongue is automatically controlled. Or controlling the mind, just hear about Krishna, think about Krishna, remember manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyajinama namaskaru. Krishna says, think of me, worship me, offer you honor. So generally we think, yes, these are very clear, understandable, in some ways very practical instructions, but when it comes to application, it's not so easy. Not so easy, especially since mind is very, very distracted, and therefore just to hear, be patient, and just stop there, sometimes it's not very encouraging. Hey, how long do I have to wait? That's usually, being patient means, after we hear it so many times, next thing that we realize, how long?
Give us some peace of mind.
So, this essay, so far, the topics we've discussed, this essay does explain the necessity to be patient, but not just blind patience, just sit and wait and for that someday when the mercy will come. In fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur even says, he concludes this essay, and I read this before, and I'll read it one more time because it really sets the mood. He concludes this essay by just giving his definition, a conclusive definition of patience. And he says that there's another meaning applicable to the word dhaya, or patience. Those who engage in sadhana desire to attain results. Karmis hope to attain heavenly happiness by fruitive activities. Jnanis hope to attain liberation by speculative knowledge. Devotees, they also want some result. Does anybody remember what that result was? For who was there?
Pleasing Krishna.
Pleasing Krishna, yes. The devotees want a result. They want Krishna's pleasure. The devotees hope to please Krishna by their devotion. Being impatient, due to prolonged sadhana, some people fall from the path to the ultimate goal. Why? Because sometimes we begin to realize that we want Krishna's pleasure, to be pleased by his devotion, but sometimes it seems just not the easiest person to please. Mm-hmm. Although he's, what is that? In the Chaitanya Bhagavat? Bhava Brahi Janardana. Bhava Vihi. He accepts the essence of a devotee's attitude. And Krishna's, that's his mercy, that's his kindness. But nonetheless, and I always think of this verse, which gives evidence that Krishna's not necessarily the easiest person to please. And it's the verse spoken by Prahlad Maharaj. I think I quoted it before, when he's speaking to his classmates, and he's telling them, my dear friends, you cannot please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even if you become an expert Brahmin. Even if you become very much advanced in etiquette or vast learning, not by austerities, nor by accepting vows, nor by great sacrifices, nor by chastity. None of these things will awaken the Lord's pleasure. The Lord is pleased only when one has unflinching, unalloyed devotional service to Him. Without sincere devotional service, everything else is simply a show. Prahlad is telling this to his friends. Just a show. Why? Because what attracts Krishna's attention? Krishna's attention is attracted by those whose hearts are pure and who are motivated with love, with a desire to satisfy Him, to please Him. Very much. Of course, we know that even those whose hearts aren't impure can still get Krishna's attention. But how do they get Krishna's attention? By serving those whose hearts are pure. So we have a go-between, a stick. You know, just as Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami says, the path is very difficult, I am blind, my feet are slipping again and again, therefore I pray to the saints to grant me their stick of mercy for my support. We got that stick of mercy by the mercy of saints, that we can get Krishna's attention by serving those who have Krishna's attention. But Prahlad Maharaj is specifically saying, without unflinching, unalloyed devotional service to Him, everything else is a show. Why? Because we're doing it not to get Krishna's attention, because we're not doing the right thing to get Krishna's attention. If you want Krishna's attention, it's got to be pure, unmotivated, unalloyed devotional service. That's when Krishna looks. You've got it. So, if we don't have Krishna's attention, then we're doing something very big, we're doing it to get somebody else's attention, because Krishna's not looking. He's not looking. So Prahlad is saying, without this sincere devotional service is a show. Therefore, he specifically says, you could study, be very learned, perform great sacrifices, or severe austerities. But it's not. Bhagavat bhakti hinasya jati shastram japastapa pranaseva dehanam mandanam lokaranjanam. For a person who's devoid of devotional service, then even if one is expert in studying all Vedic literatures, even if he knows all kinds of Vedic mantras, even if he takes birth in a great family or nation, these are all considered to be like ornaments in a dead body. They simply serve the concocted pleasures of the general populace. This is for a person who's devoid of devotion. So, in other words, all of these things are considered to be externally an asset. But if you really want Krishna's attention, there has to be devotion. So it's the devotion that Krishna wants to see. Therefore, without devotion, as Prahlad Maharaj says, he's not going to be pleased by any of these things. So, as we said, it's not stuck easy of a person to please, especially if we look within our own hearts and we do a little inventory. Sometimes we may find that there's some things there that just obstacles in the path of devotional service. There's some subtle desires that are obstacles. So, okay, so what does that mean? In reference to patience. How do we put this into perspective? Does it mean I have to wait till I'm pure before I get Krishna's pleasure? No, as we know, Krishna is pleased by one's efforts, by one's endeavors to become pure. This is also is a way to get Krishna's. To those who are constantly endeavoring, Krishna says, worshipping me, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. So, constant endeavor is required, even though we may not necessarily be pure. Or Krishna says, Teshami Panakampartam Mahamigyana Jamtama Nashayam Babastu Gyanabhasata. Out of compassion for them, I am dwelling within their hearts, destroyed with the shining lamp of knowledge, darkness of ignorance. And there's also verse, Tesha Nichipi Yuktanam Yoga Kshenu Vahamiham Ananyas Chintayatama Yena Jinakpayupasate. To those who are endeavoring to meditate upon me, meditating on my transcendental form, I preserve what they have and I carry what they lack. So the many verses where Krishna gives evidence that, yes, he helps for those who are making some endeavor. So what should these endeavors be? We should be making some endeavors and be patient at the same time. And that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is speaking about here in this essay. He's speaking about, yes, we have to achieve some state of self-control. And he says, he defines daya, or patience, by the verse, Vachovegam Manasakrodavegam Jivavegam Udarapastavegam. That's the first verse of Upadeshamrita, which is translated as, what is it? A sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals is qualified to make disciples all over the world. So he says, by the quality of daya, or patience, a practitioner controls first himself and then the whole world. We spoke about that in Dwarka. We told the story about Raghunath Das and how he was given the benediction by Haridas Thakur that he be completely detached from this world. And then when his father, Govardhan Majumdar, asked Balaramacharya what benediction did Haridas Thakur give to my son, Balaramacharya said, told him, he says, Haridas Thakur gave him the benediction that he will control the whole world. And we explained, yes. He gave him the benediction. He told Govardhan, because Govardhan really wants to hear something like that. He gave very opulent gifts to Haridas Thakur, thinking that they would appeal to him, and certainly he would give a very wonderful benediction to his son. And when he heard that he got a benediction to control the whole world, he was in ecstasy. Because he was thinking, I control this vast tract of land, and yet my son's going to have the whole world to control. So, and then the deep meaning of Balaramacharya's statement was, is that, yes, that Raghunath Das got the benediction to control the whole world. Why? Because he'll have complete control of himself. And because he has complete control of himself, being completely detached from anything in this world, nothing in this world will be able to control him. Nothing. Because of his detachment. When a person is genuinely detached, then nobody can allure him. Nobody can influence him to do something separate. His mind is fixed. His mind is fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. This is this Prahlad Maharaj. Right? His father tried to convince him to give up his worship. But his mind was fixed. His father realized that to try to change the mind of my son is like trying to straighten out the curved tail of a dog. Right? He used that example. You try to straighten out the curved tail of a dog, you pull it out and you let it go, it always immediately goes back. You use that example in the Bhagavatam. Try to change the course of my son's mind is always, I threatened him, tried to kill him, nothing can change him. Not influenced in any way because his mind is always fixed. Savaya Mana Krishna Padada Vinda. His mind is always fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna. So, Haridas Thakur also was an example. His mind was always fixed on Krishna. And even though Ramachandra Kand sent a prostitute to try to allure him, oh my dear Thakur, you have such a handsome body. Right? She was sent there, commissioned. But the Thakur was so fixed on Krishna's name. And that's even these allurements could not in any way affect him. Unaffected, not in any way controlled by these allurements. So, therefore, what a sadhaka and these essays are about sadhakas, persons who have established the goal in their life to actually please Krishna. What a sadhaka should aspire for is to be able to control these urges. So, then Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained, and we spoke about, the urge to speak. And how, in a practical way, we can control the urge to speak. We won't go into all the detail, but we gave many very detailed and relevant instructions that yes, one way to control the urge to speak is to always speak about Krishna, but that's not always the easiest thing to do, and we're not. It's not always. We're not always in a circumstance when we can speak about Krishna, and we gave different examples of what do we do when we're at work, and can't speak about Krishna, you know, and immediately. What if a person's going to a restaurant, signing a contract with a client for millions of dollars, and he starts telling him about Krishna? He may not get the contract. And so many different. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave different explanations of how one speaks under different circumstances, and it's not sinful in any way to discuss these topics under certain circumstances. But he did say that one has to be very careful about speaking about others. And we gave the different criteria how that one should speak about others. He says generally when two people get together and they begin to speak about others, then immediately they create enmity. Why? Because sometimes they may speak out of pride, they may speak out of envy, they may speak about someone else in order to achieve distinction. They want to get distinction, and therefore they say some things about others in a way that's disparaging, because then it makes them look like, you know, I'm the better person, but we have a good cause together now that we know this together. And I will lead you on the right path. So the person tries to get distinction by criticizing. So therefore Bhaktivinoda Thakura specifically states what is necessary topics about speaking about others and what are unnecessary topics about speaking about others. So that was the first urge to speak, and I'm not going to go too deeply into that. I want to go continue now about the urge of the mind, because that's the next topic. And it's relevant. And how to control the urge of the mind, at the same time include this within our topic of patience, because we really have to be patient when it comes to controlling the mind. But what do we do in the meantime until our mind is controlled, completely controlled? What do? We'll speak about that. It is the duty of a sober person to tolerate the urge of the mind until one is habituated to control the urge of the mind. How can one perform devotional service with attention? A materialist sits in the chariot of the mind and never gets relief from its various urges except during sleep. And even during sleep, many thoughts such as good and bad dreams come. So sometimes we try to go to sleep to become free from the raging mind, thinking, yes, then we go to sleep and we have bad dreams. No peace. And we oftentimes quote that example from the 11th, very good analogy from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, which helps us to understand about dreams. And the verse states, although the duality of the material world does not ultimately exist, the conditioned soul considers it to be the real due to his conditioned intelligence. And he gives the example that when a conditioned soul at night dreams of something wonderful or horrible, or when he daydreams of something he would like to have, he would like to avoid, he creates a reality which has no existence beyond his imagination. And he uses this as an example of the need to control the mind. He says, when the mind is thus controlled, fixed on the lotus feet of Krishna, then one will actually become situated in a platform of fearlessness. But in the beginning, he uses the example of dreams. And he says, just like when a person has a very wonderful dream, sometimes we have wonderful dreams at night, and we enjoy the dreams because they're nice. We think it's real. And then we wake up from the dream, and then we become sad because we realize it's a dream. So the dream is nice as long as we're dreaming, but as soon as we wake up, we become very sad. And then he gives the example that sometimes we may have terrible dreams. Everybody has sometime or another had a terrible dream. Terrible dream. Because I fly a lot. I have these dreams. Like so many times I'm on a dream and I'm on a plane. And somehow the plane seems to be dropping very quickly.
Oh my God.
And dreams usually happen when I'm on a plane. Quite often I'm on a plane also. Dreaming, I'm sound asleep and I'm dreaming of planes. I wake up. And then, when you wake up from that kind of a dream, you're happy. Right? Because it was a bad dream, but now, before you had a good dream and you woke up and you're sad, but now you had a bad dream and you wake up and you're happy. So, the verse describes that the happiness and the sadness that you experience when you wake up from the dream has no connection with reality. It's only connected to a dream. So in the same way, he says that the reality of this material world is just like good and bad dreams. Because
Duality means to see things separate from Krishna. So they're like good, bad dreams. But they're not connected to reality, because the only reality is Krishna. He's Janmadhyasayatam Varayat. He's the transcendent reality. Matak parataram nanyat kinchid asti dananja. Krishna says, there's no truth superior to me. Everything rests upon me just like pearls are resting on a thread. There is no reality other than Krishna. So when we see things separate from Krishna, then we become happy and distressed, but it's not connected to reality. Just as the bad, just as the happiness and distress we feel when we awaken from good and bad dreams is not connected to reality. So the verse says, there's night dreams and there's day dreams. You know, a person dreams of night, something horrible, something terrible, or when he daydreams of something he would like to have, or something he would like to avoid. He creates a reality that has no existence beyond his imagination. He creates his own reality. The daydream also. Everybody has a daydream. Right? Something we just dream about. But oftentimes people dream about having nothing to do. Right? It's just, you know, when things are just like accumulated to the point like, what is, I need some space. Right? You just think about, where's that point? Where is it? Where is it? Tomorrow? Is it next week? Is it, what day of the week is it? I have nothing I have to do. And then it keeps you going. Right? I can plow through these next 4 days because I know there's a day where there's nothing I have to do. So I can just keep on the dream. And then the day comes. And then you think, what do I do today? And then, but the worst part comes is when you spend most of the day thinking about what you want to do and the day's over like that. And you think, where did the day go? I wanted to do this, I wanted to do that, I wanted to do this, I wanted to do that. It's gone. So that's one kind of daydream, but there's other more protracted daydreams, like we think way off in the future, that when I have, you know, $500,000 in my bank account, I'll be able to. Which I'm just smiling. I'm not talking about you, Michael Chan. But we have these daydreams also. And something that we like to have. And then when we get it, just like Prabhupada he gives an example. He says, use the example of the material world is called Kunta. It's a place of anxiety. Spiritual world is Vaikunta. No anxiety. He says, but in the material world there must always be anxiety. It's unavoidable. He says, but there are two types of anxiety. There's material anxiety and there's spiritual anxiety. Material anxiety is entangling, and spiritual anxiety is purifying. And he gives the example of material anxiety. He says, material anxiety is just like the person, I'm paraphrasing, but this is pretty much what he said in his lecture. Material anxiety is the person who's always anxious, how to get more and more money. So he's always in anxiety, money, 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 how to get it. And then, when he finally gets it, his anxiety continues. What do I do with it? How do I spend it? Where do I keep it so I don't lose it? It's not like the anxiety is over. He says the anxiety just simply continues. But now it's a different form, a different manifestation. And Prabhupada even used, I think in this lecture, he says, should I put the money under my mattress? He says, to protect it so no one will steal it. So he said this is material anxiety. He said in spiritual anxiety, is to be anxious for Krishna.
And he gave the examples, it's just like a temple president. He's also thinking how to acquire money, but he's thinking how to get money for Krishna's service. And therefore he's willing to undergo austerities, difficulties, whatever it may come, without taking anything for himself. But his interest, his primary interest, is to utilize it for the service of the Lord. He says that's purifying. So the point is the daydream is something that we want to have in the future, and then when we get it, but it doesn't really turn out the way we expected it to be. It doesn't really give us the peace of mind and happiness that we thought. It looked good. The anticipation of getting it really looks good when you don't have it. Because it looks like when you have it, there'll be relief and it'll make me happy. But as Bhaktivinoda Thakur is going to explain here, there's more to life than relief. He's going to explain that point right here about him. Sometimes we think relief, that's where it's at. That's happiness, relief. But it's not at all. That's Krishna Bhakti Nishkama Atayeva Shanta Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakadeva Shanta. The person who simply wants relief, he still has lusty desires. He's kami. Bhukti Mukti Siddhikami Sakadeva Shanta. Because he still wants relief. He has some desire even for peace. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, we'll get to that. Maybe I'm going a little bit too. He explains that this desire to regulate the mind simply to achieve peace is sakama bhakti. It's not a pure desire. Because it means I want to enjoy my peace. And therefore I'm thinking, I want to enjoy my peace, I want to enjoy. And because I want to enjoy, it's counterproductive.
Peace is impossible.
Peace is impossible. It's impossible. Sakaliya shanta. It's impossible. So, therefore, in the same way, a person tries to daydreams of something he would like to have, or daydreams of something he would like to avoid. And Prahlad Maharaj, again, 5-year-old boy with all his realizations, says in the Bhagavatam, that in the material world, every materialist is endeavoring for happiness, and he's trying to mitigate his distress, and therefore he's acting accordingly. Actually, one can be happy as long as he does not endeavor for happiness. Because as soon as he begins his endeavors for happiness, immediately he creates his conditions for distress. In the material world, every materialistic person is endeavoring for happiness and he's trying to avoid distress, and therefore he's acting accordingly. Actually, one cannot be happy as long as he endeavors for happiness, because as soon as he endeavors for happiness, what happens? He's creating his future suffering. Because the constitutional nature of every living being is to endeavor for Krishna's happiness. So the whole essence of this essay is about controlling urges. But the point is, well, yes, we have to control the urge to speak. We have to control the urge of the mind. But the symptom of life is to have urges. It's the symptom of life. So simply to try to stop these urges. Prabhupada gives the example. In the Bhagavatam, he used the analogy of the person who tries to control his mind and senses. He says it's by his own efforts, it's like the person who goes into the river, fast-moving river, and tries to stop the waves with his hands. He says, if a person tries to control his mind and senses by his own efforts, it's just like a person going into the river. And sometimes when we hear this term river, it's very practical these days, example. Because not only are there rivers that flow very quickly, but we see what happens when the rivers flood. Flash floods, right? When these flash floods come, or tsunamis, or whatever, and what happens? It sweeps everything up in it. And you can just say, stop, river. It's not going to stop. after you. This is going to carry you away. So he says to try to control these urges by our own efforts is like trying to stop the flow of a river by with our arms. He says, but the rivers, they continue to flow, and the rivers eventually enter into the ocean. And the ocean is more powerful than the rivers. And the waves of the ocean push back the waves of the river. So Prabhupada uses this example to help us understand that yes, by our own efforts, not possible. But he says the waves of the ocean are the activities of devotional service. He says when the mind is filled with thoughts, making plans how to serve Krishna favorably, the urge of the mind has to be there. Yes, how to serve Krishna favorably. Anya balasata sunyam jnanakamanyanavartam. Then this, we're getting help from beyond ourselves. Like the rain clouds, it's putting out the forest fire. We're getting help. We can put out the forest fire by throwing buckets of water. But when the rain cloud takes the whole water, all the water, extracts the water from the ocean and carries it and dumps it on the forest fire, that's mercy. It's coming from a source outside of ourselves. Devotional service is also getting mercy from a source outside ourselves. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Kuchate Savaparivinya Muktam Taparat Vinaniya Malam. When one engages the mind and the senses in the service of Krishna, in the service of Rishikesha, who is the master of the senses, then what happens? Because he's the master of the senses, what happens? The senses become controlled. And when Savaparivinya Muktam, one becomes free from all material designations. So, these controlling the mind is like controlling the waves of the river. And therefore we were explaining that to stop the urges of the mind doesn't mean that we simply try to stop the mind. Because the mind needs to have urges. Just like there's a very wonderful verse in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, Narada Muni. He gives us the same example about flowing rivers, but he uses it in a completely different context. He says, in the place where pure devotees meet, following the rules and regulations, and are thus always engaged in discussing the topics of the Lord, just like the flowing of the waves of the river. He says, if one enters into that river, then one will forget about all the necessities of life, such as hunger and thirst, and one will become free from all kinds of illusion, lamentation, and fear. So he gives an example of the waves of the river. But there's now we always say about another waves of the river, the flowing of the waves of Krishna Katha. If one gets caught up in these waves, it's like if one gets caught up in the bhajans of Bhadihari Das Prabhu, then like the waves of the river. They just flow. You can't help but get caught, swept up. You're swept up thinking of Krishna, thinking of the holy name. It's just like waves. And what happens? All that effort to control the mind that we try to do independently to become peaceful, all that anxiety that we're thinking, let me stop thinking about these things, let me get peace of mind. We couldn't get it. But without even any endeavor on our part, we immediately, our minds are immediately transported to some place beyond this world. And Narada Muni says, when your mind gets transported to some place beyond this world, you'll even forget about all the necessities of life. You'll forget that your legs are killing you, your back is killing you. You forget about hunger, you forget about thirst. He gives the example. You become free from illusion, lamentation, and fear. Get caught up. And we see so many examples in the Bhagavatam that the devotees who are eager to hear. Narada Muni himself, he got caught up in the association of the Bhaktivedantas. They were always discussing pastimes of the Lord, 5-year-old boy wandering about. And because he heard the discourses of the Bhaktivedantas, he ate the remnants of food from them, stayed in their association, became the great Narada Muni, as we know him. Even Bharat Maharaj, when he fell down and took birth as a deer, in his deer body, because remembering a deer at the time of death, he had to take birth in a deer, but because of his devotional activities performed in a previous life, he's able to remember why he was in the deer's body. And in the deer's body, he would go to some ashram. I can't remember the name of the ashram. He would go and he would stand on the outskirts and simply listen to their discourses in the deer's body. And then in his next birth, he took birth as Jadbharat. So, the point is, we can't stop these urges. Shrinvata svakata krishna punya shravana kirtana Siddhantyasto yabhadana vidunoti suhitsita. Shri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the super soul in the heart of every living being, he cleanses the desire for material enjoyment within the heart of those persons who do what? Who develop the urge to hear his messages. Develop the urge to hear his messages. In other words, not stop the urges of the mind. They know urges have to be there. But they develop the urge to hear about Krishna. Yeah, I have to hear about Krishna. I have to. If I don't hear about Krishna, all I have is my agitated mind. But when the urge is awakened, some desire, and Prabhupada explains in Upadeshamrita that bhakti is cultivation of desire. Desire is there, but has to be brought out, cultivated. There's the verse in the 12th chapter when Krishna tells Arjuna, he says, first in the chapter of devotional service, he says, the highest platform is just always think of me. Here we go again. Krishna's giving the instruction, always think of me. In so many places, Krishna says, always think of me. But in the 12th chapter, Krishna gives a concession. He really says, okay, if you can't always think of me, says, if you can't always think of me, follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, and this way, develop the urge to attain me. Here we go. Krishna's saying, you need to have some urges. If you don't have urges for Krishna, you're going to have these other urges. But yet people, they think, and he's going to go on to explain this, we'll get to this point. I'll read a little bit farther. We were reading about during sleep, these urges in the mind. It's in order to regulate the urges of the mind, rishis have propounded Ashtanga Yoga and Raja Yoga. But the Lord's prescription is that one should regulate the mind from the inferior tastes by giving it a higher taste. Those who are on the path of devotional service can easily regulate the mind. Okay. We heard that one before. Those who are really on this path, Krishna says those who are on this path and their mind is resolute, determined, yes. Those who are very resolute in this path, and their aim is one. But the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many branched. And therefore Krishna says, what bogai shaya pasaktanam taya prahatachatachetasa. In the minds of those who are too much attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence, and who are bewildered by such things, then there's no yavasayatmaki buddha, buddhi. There's no resolute determination for devotional service. Can't be. Incompatible. So, for those who are on the path of devotional service, they can easily regulate the mind. The mind cannot remain without urges. If urged towards spiritual subjects, the mind is properly engaged and it will not hanker for insignificant subjects. Many people think that without Ashtanga Yoga, there is no alternative to regulate the mind. But Patanjali Muni has accepted that just as Ashtanga Yoga regulates the mind, Bhakti Yoga can also. Meditation on the Supreme Lord as propounded by Patanjali is not pure devotional service. Rather, it is Sakama Bhakti, or motivated. As we explained before, I want peace. I want to control my mind. I can't control my mind. This is too much. I got to control it. So, Patanjali, Rishi is given Ashtanga Yoga system. There's Yama, there's Niyama, there's Asana, Pranayama, Pratyahara, Dharana, Dhyana, Samadhi. But these are eight stages of Ashtanga Yoga system. Yes, they are aimed to actually bring the mind to different states of control, which it describes as kshipta, mudha, vikshipta, ekagra, and nirudha. These different stages of the mind. Kshipta is the stage of when the mind is disturbed, mudha is bewildered, vikshipta means distracted, ekagra means concentrated, and nirudha, completely controlled, fixed samadhi. So, there are different processes for controlling the mind. But some people's Bhakti Vinod Thakur says that some people think that without Ashtanga Yoga there's no alternative to regulate the mind. But Patanjali Muni has accepted that just as Ashtanga Yoga regulates the mind, Bhakti Yoga can also. Meditation of the Supreme Lord is propounded by Patanjali is not pure devotional service, rather the Sakama Bhakti are motivated. If devotional service is performed for the purpose of regulating the mind, then it is certainly not devoid of material desires. So, here, he's making it clear. And we already explained before. Yes, if we're simply motivated to have a peaceful mind, that's not pure devotional service. And therefore, Krishna says, for one who is not connected to the Supreme, he can have neither a controlled mind nor transcendental intelligence, without which there is no question of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace? If one's not connected to the Supreme. So, therefore, immediately one thinks, okay, let me control my mind, I get peace. Krishna says, if you're not connected to Krishna, there's no question of peace. It can't last. Of course, generally, one who completely controls the mind, as Krishna also states in the Bhagavad Gita, for one who controls his mind is his best friend, for one who fails to control is his worst enemy. And in the next verse he says, for one who has conquered his mind, super soul is reached. And then he attains tranquility. For such a man, heat and cold, happiness, distress, honor, dishonor, all the same. So for one who conquers his mind, he may, by conquering his mind, come to the realization gradually that after conquering the mind, that super soul is there. And then Prabhupada explains in the commentary, when he comes in contact with the super soul, then he has to follow the superior dictation of the super soul. That is the value of conquering the mind. Most people think conquering the mind means that now that I've conquered the mind, I can enjoy peace, nothingness. What is it there? Void. This void is, unfortunately, is not Aruya Krishna Param Tatat Patam Tatat Patam Tatat Nadi Yus Madandraya, as Lord Brahma says. When they perform severe austerities to control the mind, but they think themselves liberated, but they fall from that position of majesty of superiority because they failed to connect with Krishna's lotus feet. Fail to connect. So, therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining here, if devotional service is performed for the purpose of regulating the mind, then it is certainly not devoid of material desires. Favorable cultivation of devotional service in relationship to Krishna is the real meaning of pure bhakti. Therefore, whenever pure devotional service is performed, joyfulness of the mind automatically arises from amongst extraneous fruits. Srimad Bhagavatam states, Tasmat kina pipayena mana krishna niveshayet. Prabhupada also used to quote the verse by Rupa Goswami. Yena tena pakanina mana krishna niveshayet. Yes. He says it's the duty of the spiritual master to get his disciples to somehow or other think of Krishna. Somehow or other. All the rules and regulations can come later. And Prabhupada used to quote this verse many times when people would criticize his disciples. Oh, when they quote Sanskrit, their pronunciation is not good. Or sometimes there'll be other, they say other things. They're not qualified Brahmins, or make so many statements about, you know, the devotees' lack of, you know, expertise in various grammatical activities. And Prabhupada would explain, no, actually, yena tena prakarana mana krishna niveshayet. It's the duty of the acharya is to somehow or other get his disciples to think of Krishna. Because that is the most powerful. Everything else, for all the rules and prohibitions, all the rules and regulations, they can come later. And Prabhupada even himself, you know, did that in the early days in 1966, you know, when everybody was coming and staying in Second Avenue, and some people were still, you know, devotees were telling, no, I think it was in San Francisco, devotees were telling stories in the early days, some of them would go to the local coffee shop and sit down, and during the day they would leave Frederick Street and go and have a cup of coffee, and sometimes they'd smoke cigarettes or something like that. They'd come back and be in the ashram.
Eat do nots.
Huh?
Eat do nots.
Eat do nots. Eat do nots. Donuts. You know, so Prabhupada just, you know, he was there every morning, was giving his Bhagavatam class and having kirtan. Everybody was in ecstasy having the kirtan, and then during the day they go off. Yeah. And then one day, you know, Prabhupada put up, you know, from now on, from today on, everybody who stays in this ashram, we should know there are four regulative principles. Four rules and regulations. And that's how it was introduced. Prabhupada just stuck it up one day. And the people looking, what did the Swamiji put up? No intoxication. So the point is first connect them to Krishna, and then once they've got some little connection, then gradually you can take away, because they have some experience. So this is the beauty, this is the power of bhakti, it's the power and mercy of the Vaishnavas. That the Vaishnavas, they're not, you know, they're, because they're free from envy, they're compassionate towards others, they're always thinking of ways of how to induce others to think of Krishna, to hear about Krishna, to be attracted to Krishna, to remember Krishna. It's not that they go out on a campaign that say to everybody, give up this, give up that, don't do this, don't do that. No, the Vaishnavas know the power of bhakti. And because the Vaishnavas are, that is Lord Chaitanya himself, that is his mission. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it describes that Lord Chaitanya, in this age, he made bhakti so easily accessible. Right. What was it? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya? He described as Kripam Buddhi Yastamaham Padye. What is that verse? Huh? Offer my respectful basis to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Huh? Vairagya. Vairagya Vijanija Bhakti Yoga. Sikshatikam Purushatarana. That's right. Lord Chaitanya, his ocean of mercy. And he's come to teach devotion unto himself, detachment from everything that is not connected to Krishna. And I can't remember what the other was.
What's that? Make up Purushaparana.
Shri Krishna Chaitanya Sharirudhari Buddhayasthamaham Papadhyaya. Yes. So in other words, Lord Chaitanya came to first to give. And Prabhupada specifically states, he says, the difference between Krishna and Lord Chaitanya is Krishna says, first surrender. First, Sarvadhamma Puritsaja Mamikam Sarvadhamma Praja. First you surrender to me, then I'll deliver you. But Lord Chaitanya took that condition away. He said, no, just take. Just take. Well, he gave first. He didn't say, give up. First he gave. That is his mercy. That is why Rupa Goswami describes it as the most magnificent incarnation. Because he came to freely give. He didn't set any conditions first. He just gave. Take this holy name. E nechi o shari maya nashi bhava nagri hare nama maha mancha dao tumi magi. I've come to give the medicine. This is the medicine. Take the holy name. By taking the holy name and beginning to chant, then what happens? And gradually, gradually all these things become cleared away from the heart. So, therefore, the Vaishnavas, they are the same principle. Yenatena pakarna mana krishna vaishya. What is it?
Sarvavedini Shedaya.
Oh no, that is Smartavyam Satatam Vishnu, Vismartavyo Nijatuchit. Sarvavedini Shedaya, Etiyo Eva Kinkara. Krishna must always be remembered.
Yeah, but this has the same last two lines.
Oh really?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe.
I think so.
Maybe different places might be different. One verse that I've heard is. Oh, that's right. That's right. Mana Krishna Nishida. That's right. Sarvavedini Shedaya, Etiyo Eva Kinkara. And it's also in Smartalyam Satatam Vishnu. And it's the same. Yes. All the rules and all the prohibitions are meant to be the servants of these principles. Sarva Vidhi Nishedashiva. All the prescribed activities and all the nishedas, the prohibited activities. So the point is, yes, we should always be thinking of Krishna. But if we can't always think of Krishna, we have to be patient, but what do we do while we're patient? Atachatam samadhatam nashikosi mahistira. Krishna says what you should do while you're patient. That is, if you can't fix your mind upon me always without deviation, follow these regular principles of bhakti yoga and this way develop a desire to attain me. So, following the regular principles of bhakti yoga, most people when they hear this, they really think no meat, no fish, no gambling, intoxication. But this is not the regular principles of bhakti yoga. It's the regular principles of human life. regular principles of bhakti yoga means to regulate the mind every day to hear about Krishna. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in his commentary to that verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he gives a very nice commentary which explains this point. The verse Smartavya Satatam Vishnu Vismartavya Nijatu Chit. Krishna must always be remembered, he must never be forgotten. All the rules, sarva vidhis, the positive activities aimed for remembering Krishna, and all the prohibited activities are meant to serve these two principles. So he explains that, this is a very important point, that if one is always thinking about Krishna constantly, why does he have to be worried about what the prohibited activities are? Why does he have to think about the things that I'm not supposed to do? He's automatically not doing them. Why does he have to learn what the prohibited activities are? He's already not doing them. His mind's always absorbed in Krishna. So he explains that in this particular verse, what is it? Smartavyam Satatam Vishnu. Satatam. He says, usually the word satatam means always. But in this verse it doesn't mean always, because if one's always remembering Krishna, why does one have to learn what the prohibited activities are? Why does he have to know what the nishedas are, you know? If he's always engaged in 10%, his mind is always absorbed in Krishna. So therefore he says the word satatam in this verse doesn't mean always. It means every day. Every day. Every day, one has to remember Krishna. And therefore, the verse is Smartavyam, one must remember Krishna
Ideally, always. But while we still have to know what the nishedas are, vidhis and nishedas, we have to know what the prohibited activities are. We have to know things to avoid. Things that we shouldn't be speaking about. Things that we shouldn't be hearing about. Things that we shouldn't be doing which distracts the mind from Krishna. Right? While we still have to practice these things, then what we need to do is every day hear about Krishna. Every day chant Hare Krishna. Every day hear about Krishna in association of devotees. Every day speak about Krishna. Then gradually what does Krishna say? If you do this every day, he says, if you can't fix your mind upon me without deviation, and follow the regular principles of bhakti yoga, which means every day, sadhana, doing our work, engaged in hearing and chanting about Krishna. In this way, you'll cultivate the urge to come to me. This is how to cultivate the urge to come to me, Krishna says. Of course, he gives other concessions too. But we're talking about bhakti yoga, and this is about sadhakas. This essay is about those who are actually engaged in sadhana, who understands that, yes, I have to engage in sadhana bhakti, I have to chant Hare Krishna, I have to hear about Krishna, to regulate my activities every day. And if I do this every day, then what happens? The urge, this natural urge, will be awakened within the heart. And this urge will immediately diminish all the other urges of the mind. And that's the point that he makes. The Srimad Bhagavatam states, Tasmat kena pyupayena mana Krishna naveshya. Somehow or other one must consider the form of Krishna very seriously. If one follows this instruction, then the mind will be engaged at the lotus feet of Krishna, and it will not easily wander into other subjects. For the practitioner, the urge of the mind is regulated by pure cultivation of favorable devotional service in relationship to Krishna. By carefully meditating on this subject, one can know the inherent differences between yoga and bhakti. Therefore, he concludes this topic about the mind there. The next is to restrain the urge of anger. And he gives different examples from Srimad Bhagavatam about the Brahman, the Avanti Brahman, how he controlled his anger even though people were passing urine on him and performing all kinds of heinous activities and stealing his water pot, his begging bowl, his rod. And that's the next section about controlling the urge of anger. Tonight was about the urge of the mind and how bhakti yoga is superior to ashtanga yoga because one gets help from the Supreme. I have to stop here. It's 8 o'clock and I have a flight tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock. 6 or 6:30, what time is it? 6:30.
From Newark, so it's 5.
From Newark, and I have to go to New Jersey. So, I think I should stop here. Any questions?
Excuse me?